Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, more fallout in South Carolina from a cop who body slammed a young girl to the ground, snatching her out of her chair. The sheriff says he is disturbed by what he saw, but now claims it's another video showing the girl took a swipe at the officer. We'll break it down. President Barack Obama talks to police chiefs around the country, saying they may not have individually caused a long history of racial tension in minority communities, but they have a responsibility to fix it. Also on the show, Olympic swimmer Cullen Jones breaks down the importance of teaching black kids how to swim. Plus, Basketball Hall of Famer and former Globetrotter Mel Lark Lemon talks about his work with kids. Also, it's Wildin' Out Wednesday. You know we're going to have a little fun with our comedians. Time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Of course, folks, this is the video from South Carolina we talked about yesterday, again today, where a student, a young girl, was body slammed, snatched out of her chair, body slammed, dragged by a cop, Ben Fields, out of a classroom. The Richland School District and Sheriff's Department, they're investigating the incident. The FBI has also been brought in. On yesterday, a news conference took place where the sheriff came back from the police chief's meeting in Chicago. In Chicago, where President Barack Obama spoke yesterday, and he said there's a third video showing the girl taking a swipe at the officer, but he also said he was disturbed at what took place after that. Here's some of yesterday's news conference.
What we all watched on that shamefully shocking video is reprehensible.
The student was wrong in what she did. There's no doubt about that. She disrupted class. She was disturbing the other students from getting their education. So she's in the wrong. But does her actions meet the level to what this officer did? That's what we're going to decide. I want to throw up. I mean, it's literally, it just makes you sick to your stomach when you see that initial video. But again, that's a snapshot. As a professional, I have to look beyond just that one first video and look at the total picture, and that's what we're doing.
Department of Justice, they've begun a separate civil rights investigation in the case. Also, the South Carolina NAACP calling for the school district and Deputy Ben Fields to be held accountable for the violent classroom confrontation.
We believe that her civil rights were violated, and that the investigations should support that. And then an appropriate charge should be made to the officer.
I'm comfortable saying that race is a factor. Race is indeed a factor. And of course, people will admit something else and say that it isn't. But we do have a problem in South Carolina. We do have a problem in America.
Also yesterday, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated released the following statement with regards to this particular case. They said, quote, the members of Alpha Kappa Alpha are outraged about the conduct of this resource officer and his apparent use of brutal force based on the student's alleged classroom disturbance. We call on the authorities to make a quick and thorough investigation and to take appropriate action upon completion of the investigation. That's from AKA International President Dorothy Buchanan Wilson. And I believe this is this out of all the, I haven't seen any other black sororities comment on this particular case, or organizations like a National Council of Black Women, National Congress of Negro Women, I mean, all different groups. And so let's talk about with our panel. We have Lauren Victoria Burke, Managing Editor of Politics365.com, Huey Newsom, Contributor to Project 21, National Leadership Network of Black Conservatives, and Laura Coates, former federal prosecutor. Folks, I make that point that because where are black female organizations?
They should be here. They should be as
I'm just
outraged.
Trying to understand. I mean, you got the Lynx, you got Ladies of Distinction, you got black sororities, also black fraternities. I'm just trying to understand. And again, you know, I get this whole, if you want to say maybe something else happened or whatever, but you can still say I'm disturbed by what I saw.
Exactly.
Say something.
If you're going to complain about my brother's keeper not focusing on women and something like this happens, you don't step up immediately. I think that is actually an issue. I didn't think about that, but they should be pretty quick they should be pretty quick on a video like this. There's not that much obscurity to this. And actually, I think Chief Leon Lott is talking about the fact that during the video, you see the girl throw a little punch when this guy is flipping her over. I think that's what he's talking about, because the kids that have been online who were in the classroom, none of them have said that the girl did anything prior to the video rolling, prior to what they saw.
Also, here's a piece. If you're a sheriff and you come out and you say that there's a third video, you would have released it.
Exactly.
So I'm just trying. So my deal is, I don't understand that if my police department is getting blasted, if this is a national story,
you're
saying there's a third video showing she took a swing at the officer, there's no way in the world you don't show that video yesterday's news conference.
It doesn't even matter if there was a third video where she's swinging. There is obviously, when you look at the video from a prosecutor's perspective, there is a lapse in time from whenever she allegedly took this swing into when he brings her down.
Because in that video, Shelley, cue it up, please, and play it again from the top. What you're going to see in this video here, you're going to see him, he's taking something. No, guys, I need you to pull it back. I need you to go to the beginning. I need you to go to the beginning of the video, because I want people to see the beginning. You go back to the beginning. You'll see the officer come in, and you will see the officer approach the desk. Roll the video, please. So you see him. He's standing there talking. He approaches the desk.
Right.
He's talking to her. Okay, so clearly nothing happened before this. You see him removing something from her desk, and then all of a sudden, some words are exchanged there. He's telling her what I want you to do, and then all of a sudden, you're gonna see him reach down, now try to pull her out of the desk, and then, now go back, pull it back, please. I want you to see something, folks. Go back a little bit, keep going, stop right there. Keep going a little bit further back. Now right there. Stop right there. Now play it. Freeze it. You will see his hand is under the desk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that is a deliberate attempt. It's a deliberate motion to tip the desk over and flip it over.
And officers, just because you're in a school, the civil rights does not stop. You still have constitutional rights. And just because you're a student, we saw that happen with Ahmed and his clock. You don't get to just disregard it because it's a student. What we have here is an officer, just like officers on the outside, have a responsibility to adhere to self-defense principles. You can combat whatever force you're having with you and repel it with your own. All we have here is a girl who's running her mouth, maybe, and an officer who waits. It seems to be very calm, not flinching his body back in response to a punch or anything like that, and then takes her and then drags her across the room. That is not self-defense or somebody repelling force. That is excessive. And excessive force can happen on the street, and it can happen in a school. And what we're seeing here is a school as a microcosm of what's happening on the outside.
What I'm looking for, instead of all these organizations coming forth and saying this is a reprehensible act, this is definitely a reprehensible act, let's put some pressure, let's put some political pressure on some of these unions to say, fine, we need to train and hold our officers accountable for what they're doing. This is a systematic problem throughout America. We're seeing it over and over again. Now it's in our schools. So who is being held accountable, and what are we going to change systematically to get away from these incidents?
The reason I'm specifically mentioning those organizations, because that's where pressure comes from.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I'm saying is I expect that if there is somebody who is going to speak up for a young black girl who's been affected, it's going to be black female organizations. Now, I'm not saying 100 black men should not say something. They all should. But my point is, I need to understand where all those organizations. This is a perfect example where social media is driving it. Mm-hmm. This is where you have folks in the Black Lives Matter movement who are demanding accountability. And I'm saying that's where the pressure must come. You bring that to bear on this. And look, in this sheriff, I get what he's trying to do. But he also said in that news conference that after this so-called swing, he was disturbed by what took place. There's no doubt this officer escalated the situation.
Right.
It's
a school-to-prison pipeline issue. This is not a new issue.
No.
When you look at the statistics with regard to black students and the way they're handled by police that are in school, you see that there's obviously disproportion with regard to black students.
No question.
Frankly, I think there's no reason to have a police officer
in the school
in the first place. These schools are not, we're not hearing stories, particularly in this jurisdiction, jurisdiction with regard to violence in the schools or guns in the school or anything else. So I'm wondering, why do we have a police officer? Why can't the school deal with their own problems?
And that's exactly the point I had to make, because what this officer, this is an issue that is endemic in the criminal justice system, where the officers are usurping the role of mental health professionals, of PPWC right. in this particular instance. There is no reason why this issue, this disciplinary problem, turns into a criminal matter. It's not.
It's interesting watching this here. Again, the sheriff there, he was at the International Association of Chiefs of Police conference in Chicago. Right. President Barack Obama yesterday spoke, and in that particular speech, the president talked about cops striking a delicate balance between acknowledging over-policing and supporting good community police work.
First of all, we all care about keeping crime rates low, and things have been working, and so a lot of folks say, what's the problem? But for generations, we've had African American and Latino communities who've pointed to racial disparities in the application of criminal justice, from arrest rates to sentencing to incarceration rates. And all too often, those concerns, no matter how well documented, have been brushed aside. And we can't have a situation in which a big chunk of the population feels like maybe the system isn't working as well for them. At the same time, too often, law enforcement gets scapegoated for the broader failures of our society and our criminal justice system. With today's technology, if just one of your officers does something irresponsible, the whole world knows about it moments later. And the countless incidents of effective police work rarely make it on the evening news. So it's important for us not to just pounce and jump on anything that happens and immediately just draw conclusions. We've got to resist the false trap that says either there should be no accountability for police, or that every police officer is suspect no matter what they do. Neither of those things can be right. It's on all of us to let investigations uncover facts. You know as well as I do that the tensions in some communities, the feeling that law enforcement isn't always applied fairly, those sentiments don't just come out of nowhere. I mean, there's a long history here in this country. It's not something that any individual person here is responsible for, but we all have a responsibility to do something about it, because it's part of our legacy.
All right, let's go back to our panel. Look, you have the president there who's talking to those police chiefs. At the end of the day, those chiefs are the ones who set policy in their departments.
Right.
and granted, I get for some of them where they have union contracts, they're limited. But the bottom line is, if you don't have real leadership from the top, then this stuff continues.
Exactly right. And I think the president should use the bully pulpit not to mince and think about how to have conversations, but to talk about specific policy. Is he or is he not in favor of broken windows policing? Does he or does he not defend the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution? I still don't know that 7 years into this presidency, because we spend a lot of time mincing and talking about things that have nothing to do with policy. And without policy, there is no change. It's just talking, and that's it.
But at the same time, he has to walk a fine line, right?
No, because, he doesn't.
Yes, he most certainly does.
Do you want militarization? Do you want police militarization or not? That's his issue. Now, some of these issues are not his issue, but that's a federal issue that he's in charge of. What's the answer?
But he's being unfair about what his track record is, though, because President Obama does have a record of having some criminal justice reforms. And the one thing he has to actually have is the support of Congress. And that is his biggest
not
handicap.
For police militarization.
Oh, actually, he does.
Not because
for
Pentagon 1033,
the Fourth Amendment,
no, he
has never
no,
at any point thought
no,
that it doesn't actually apply.
He needs
he's
an executive
never said
order for that.
There, well, he also needs the Supreme Court to have
see,
a case.
See, he doesn't need any
hold
of these
Lawrence,
things, and we're talking about other policy. We talk about policy that predominantly affects
black people, all of a sudden, ooh, he's got to talk to people.
No, no,
he can do an executive order.
But you're in my wheelhouse on the law.
Order and
let me explain
else.
To you about the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court has to actually change the precedent, or Congress has to change the precedent, that allows officers to have a reasonable officer standard rather than reasonable person standard in excessive force cases. Unless they have that change of law, guess what? As it trickles down to the Eric Holders, to the Loretta Lynch, all the U.S. attorneys underneath him, and all the DAs, it cannot change. So I'm not saying that Barack Obama has not had some setbacks and has not should have done more, but the bottom line is there is a Supreme Court, there is a Congress that needs to come together to protect our citizens against excessive force, and it's a legal hook, not a political one.
Right. Yeah, well, here's my thing, though. He can talk, if he can mince and use the bully pulpit to say what he just said, he can mince and use the bully pulpit to talk about broken windows policing and talk against it and talk about the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. When we stop and frisk over 1 million people in New York and he doesn't say anything, that matters. And he doesn't do that.
Well, that's fair, but at the same time, he can't nationalize local police forces or statewide police forces. So, I mean, I agree with you. He is limited. But at the same time, my original point was he has to walk a fine line, because at the same time, all the things that happen that aren't on camera that people don't see, those police officers are still in the line of fire in a lot of situations.
He hasn't walked a fine line on immigration. He hasn't walked a fine line on gay advocacy.
See, now,
all this walk a fine line, all this walk
that.
A fine
no
line talk,
yeah.
happens. We talk about issues that predominantly affect African Americans. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
I got to go to a break right now, so we got more stuff we'll have a discussion on. Our headlines, including a black man who's saying he wants refugee status in Canada. Y'all really? Also, a new study proves that driving while black leads to more stops and arrests, and walking isn't better. Black pedestrians are more likely to get hit by motorists. 15 after the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, according to the World Health Organization, meat could potentially cause cancer. That's a warning they issued, concluding that processed meat like hot dogs and bacon raises the risk of colon cancer. A group of 22 scientists found that the results of eating processed as well as red meat were similar to smoking. However, the North American Meat Institute said the new report defies common sense, stating, quote, scientific evidence shows cancer is a complex disease not caused by single foods, and that a balanced diet and healthy lifestyle choices are essential to good health. Hell, you got pesticides on plants and everything else. And so I could probably come up with a bunch of stuff that might cause cancer.
Right. I'm eating bacon. And they give you no rate of how, you know, they don't say, well, if you eat this much bacon, this is bacon. I mean,
it could cause,
right.
I don't see anybody changing their eating habits because of one study. I think we need a little bit more forcefulness in the findings.
Right. Coach, you're a vegan?
Oh no, I had bacon this morning. So, but I look at it and say the World Health Organization, I mean, I believe in it. I understand what they're talking about, and the Cancer Society has been talking about this for a very long time. However, you know, I have to, from the Midwest, I gotta trust the meat industry, and I do like my steak.
I'm from Texas, damn it, better be well done. All right, folks, in North Carolina, the manhunt at North Carolina Central University, a shooting suspect, it continues. Late Sunday evening, shots rang out near the school's football stadium.
Further investigation shows that the incident stemmed from an argument. It was determined to be isolated, not a random incident. Our highest concern and highest priority is the safety and the well-being of our students here at North Carolina Central University.
A 19-year-old sophomore was treated for minor injuries and released from the hospital a couple days ago, and so hopefully they will catch the shooter in that case. Kyle Lydell Canty, an African-American male from the U.S., went to Vancouver, Canada for a visit a month ago. Now he's trying to get Canada to grant him refugee status. Yeah, the 30-year-old spoke at his asylum hearing last week, citing the deaths of Eric Garner and Mike Brown, saying he was in fear for his life because he's black.
Came to Canada to claim asylum under Refugee Act because the United States of America is corrupt. They're consistently killing black people. It's documented. The United Nations has condemned America for their racial disparities, for their police brutality. And honestly, I kept on getting harassed by cops for no reason, false charges, false arrests. I'm not just the only one going through it. All black people in America are going through the same thing. It's corruption. on the behalf of the United States.
Kenny lives in a homeless shelter in Vancouver as he waits the decision. Canada only grants 10 American citizens asylum each year.
I thought Drake did this to get to Canada the first time. But, you know, this is something that people go to Canada for now, prescription drugs to be cheaper. Now we as black people have to go there for refugee status, essentially, in Canada. I mean, Harriet Tubman and all of her progeny, if you can call it that, had to go find the North Star up there. But are we really at that point? I don't think so.
Yeah, I have to hold judgment on this one because I want to know if there's something else he's running from besides just police brutality.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. A 6-page handwritten letter by Malcolm X is going on sale for $1.25 million, according to owner Gary Zemet. The letter was written on stationery with Arabic script and photos of historic sites. He believes the letter was written after Malcolm's 1964 pilgrimage to Mecca. In the letter, Malcolm discusses a cure for racism, saying, quote, if white Americans could accept the religion of Islam, they too could then sincerely accept the oneness of men and cease to measure others always in terms of their difference in color. The letter is being sold through Moments in Time. Also in Fort Worth, they have their first black police chief. He was sworn in last week. Joe Fitzgerald replaces Police Chief Joel Halstead, who was forced into retirement after several discrimination lawsuits filed by black officers. Also under Halstead's watch, a Black Lives Matter organization called for a rally after a white cop shot and killed Officer Christian Taylor, and after an officer killed Christian Taylor, an unarmed black college football player in Arlington, Texas. Following the incident, hundreds of white people arranged a counter-protest in support of All Lives Matter. Halstead holds degrees from Harvard and Northwestern and previously served as the first black chief of police in Missouri City, Texas, and Allentown, Pennsylvania. All right, folks, coming up next is the government spying on Black Lives Matter activists. Also, walking while black, driving while black. Can you sleep while black in America? Plus, Olympic gold medal swimmer Cullen Jones and original Harlem Globetrotter Mel Lark Lemon on the show. All of that next on News 1 Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, folks, a new study from the New York Times shows African Americans are pulled over and arrested at alarming rates compared to their white counterparts. A study looked at drivers in North Carolina, but this new analysis comes on the heels of a year filled with numerous driving while black cases, including Jermaine Reed, Sandra Bland, and Walter Scott. A study at Portland State University in Oregon and the University of Arizona suggests that African Americans walking down the street are also more likely to have their lives put at risk than their white counterparts. Here's an example.
All right, doing what?
We're walking by.
Okay.
Radio 12's out of that subject, just south of Michigan.
Walking by and doing what?
Well, you're making people nervous.
By walking by?
Yeah, they said you had your hands in your pockets.
Wow, walking by having your hands in your pockets makes people nervous to call the police when it's snowing outside?
They did.
Okay.
So are you okay?
I'm fine, or how about you?
I'm good.
All right.
What are you up to today?
Walking with my hands in my pockets, walking.
Is that an inconvenience to talk to me right now?
Hell yeah, because of the whole police situation going across the country, this is outrageous that you will let somebody tell you, oh, there's somebody walking down the street with their hands in their pockets. There's 10,000 people in Pontiac right now with their hands in their pockets, so how
you're
many...
You're right, but we do have a lot of robberies, so I'm just checking on you. You
wow.
Say you're fine? You're good.
That's fine. I mean, I just made sure I had to get this on camera and make
me
sure
there
wasn't... Yeah, for sure.
Also, motorists are more likely to hit African-American pedestrians in a crosswalk. Taxi drivers are also more likely to drive past African-Americans. That pissed me off in New York last week, but I ain't gonna say nothing. Doctors miss the telltale signs of critical medical conditions, and teachers fail to see a child of color's gift. Still on the panel, Lauren Victoria Burke, Huey Newsom, and Laura Coates also joining us via Skype. We got Rashad Robinson. Is Rashad there?
I'm here.
Rashad, I got it with color, Executive Director of ColorChange.org. Rashad, I want to bring you into this as well. I mean, my goodness, we can't walk black, drive black, can't go to school black, think black. Can we sleep black?
I don't know. I don't actually think we should be sleeping black sometimes. I mean, I think that what we continue to see over and over in this country is the concrete harms of being black in America, the impact on being black, and the fact of the matter is that until we get some real reform, some real accountability to our policing in this country, and some broader changes in our criminal justice system, this is going to continue. Thank God, though, that we now have video and other technology so that we just don't look crazy when we're telling these stories, that we actually have some backup and we're forcing some disruption in the system.
Folks, when you see these examples, I mean, to me, again, this is a perfect example of telling folks we ain't crazy. I'm in New York trying to get to Oprah's screening of Belief a couple of weeks ago, and I literally walk up to the cab and I say, "Are you on?" And the guy's like, "No." And goes to the, literally right across the street and picks a white guy up. And I'm going, I know I just asked this fool if, and again, here's the problem that people don't understand, that we have to go through this whole process of, okay, let me put a suit on, put a tie on, don't look threatening. You saw the video there, the brother's like, wait a minute, it's cold and I got my hands in my pocket, but you stopping me saying, where are you going?
I thought it was interesting that the brother in the video,
are you bothered? Hell yeah, I'm bothered.
But here's the thing. It wasn't the police officer. It was the citizens around that saw a black man with his hands in the pocket that called the police officer.
But that's what happened here in D.C. when the brother at the ATM machine. That's what happened to John Crawford in Ohio.
Look at Georgetown. Yeah. Look at Georgetown with the app.
But my whole point is with John Crawford, John Crawford's dead because some white guy in a Walmart said it was a black man with a gun. But officers have to use some sense to pull up and go,
I think the police officer here in this situation acted appropriately. My point is that it's the general population that sees us in a subhuman light.
A cop has to roll up on the scene, Lauren Rashad. A cop has to roll up and say, the dude is walking. Man, I ain't stopping this dude because he walking. At some point, you got to be a cop to say, do I see suspicious behavior? No, I don't see that. He's walking with his hands in his pocket. Man, I ain't stopping this dude.
Yeah, not to mention that most of this comes down to, you know, we have to have more than anecdotal evidence for people to believe in the cause. You know, you had the president talking about, we're not making this stuff up when we talk about Black Lives Matter and the issue. So we are now in a period of history where we have to go from the anecdotal, I know someone this happened to, it happened to you in New York, it probably happened to you, it happens to me, et cetera. And now we have to actually have statistics to back up to say, we're not crazy. The same thing happened in Brown v. Board of Education, when the Supreme Court did not listen to whether separate equal was actually a problem until they had scientists come in and talk about the impact on the minds of young black students. Until we had the statistics, anecdotes were not enough to have change. If you want change, this is the kind of thing that has to happen. And Rashad Robinson's organization is doing a great job of giving us what we need, the actual meat to actually have our cause happen.
The problem is that all these other organizations are not as much like Rashad's, which is an organization is not afraid to go and say the things that need to be said. We have a problem in black advocacy with that, with regard to speaking really strongly on things. These things have been well documented. Obviously, we've got all the stats. Yeah, how about that? We've got the documentation. So the idea that any of this is anecdotal with regard to the criminal justice system is ridiculous. We've got all the documentation on that. You're right. It's the fun.
I got to pull this up here also.
Unbelievable.
The government has, of course, a long history of spying against black folks. So if you look at COINTELPRO, now the question is, there's evidence suggesting the Department of Homeland Security, they've spied on Black Lives Matter movement activists. Color Change has filed an official Freedom of Information Act requesting to obtain documentation of surveillance activities. Rashad, what about that? What caused you guys to say that we need to pull this information?
Well, it was a mix of the history that you just talked about, but also some things that have just been starting to happen. We've seen how certain cell phones have not worked or been tapped. And so we really brought together a number of Black Lives Matter activists, Alicia Garza, Dante Barry from Million Hoodies, a number of folks who agreed to allow themselves to be put forward and to get Freedom of Information Act. And part of this is not just getting who's monitored, but how they're being monitored, how local law enforcement is working with the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense to watch folks in the movement. And what are they getting and how are they using that information? It's one thing that we have our federal government spying on. It's also that they're giving permission to local law enforcement, which we saw in Ferguson, don't have any experience in how to use technology in that way. And so whether it's drones, whether it's license plate technology, all of this are things that we're simply trying to uncover so that we can get to the truth of how tax dollars are being used in this moment to not help advance the issues we have on the table around criminal justice, but to spy on and watch young people trying to raise their voice in this moment.
And we could say this. Let me pull this here up. I'm pulling it up. Daily Cause had a piece that was done by Sean King back in January 2015. Go ahead and pull it up, Shelley. We are undercover officers in Minneapolis. They infiltrated Black Lives Matter protest movement. In fact, what they also did, they even had folks who were undercover who were in their meetings. That actually took place last year in there in Minnesota.
Well, I'm from Minnesota, and I'm a little disappointed to hear that. But I have to tell you, I am not opposed to the government being able to be a part of the protest and actually be there. What I'm opposed to are invasive tactics that go beyond your that try to.
Okay, when you say hold, stop. When you say be a part of the process and be there, what does that mean?
I don't think it's wrong to have an officer present at a rally.
No. Being present at a rally is one thing, but to infiltrate meetings, to listen to planning sessions, to act as if you're there as a part of the movement when in fact you're undercover operative, that's foul.
I think that there is sometimes there can be a basis for infiltration. This is not the situation we have, though. I don't think as a general rule, an officer cannot be present.
I'm not saying an officer present. I'm saying when you are misrepresenting yourself and you are there saying that you are an activist and you are participating in planning sessions because you want to listen to the conversation, you want to see who is speaking, and then now these are meetings, these are organizational meetings, and then you go back filing reports. Because what happened, Rashad, correct me if I'm wrong, what happened there was there were several Black Lives Matter activists in Minnesota who were arrested based upon this infiltration, this inside information, and the charges made no sense.
And that
made no sense, yes. Because they thought something was gonna happen based on planning, and it never actually ended up happening. And that's what we're ending up seeing around the country, and we just need to get to the bottom of it. So we've filed these. We've also hired some lawyers. We're working not only with the ACLU and the Brennan Center and others, but we've brought on other lawyers. We've raised some money from our members, and we're going to get to the bottom of this because, you know, these are our tax dollars at work, and we've seen the history in this country of this.
Laura, go ahead.
And that's why I agree with the idea that that having a witch hunt or trying to have almost in a way encourage people to have the officers try to use what they're saying in these private meetings against them and in conspiracy cases later down the line. I agree with you on that, and that's what I'm talking about the distinction is. I think that this is what it is a slippery slope into McCarthy era, and you have a witch hunt going on, and you have people using airplanes, tax dollar airplanes, to hover above and pretend to be a fake cell phone tower so that people can actually get information and the metadata from your phones. That's going too far. That's overreaching.
All right then, folks. Coming up, Cullen Jones talks about, first of all, Rashad, thanks a lot for joining us. I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. Cullen Jones talks about teaming up with the USA Swimming Foundation to help kids learn to swim. Plus, Mellark Lemon is here. And he is, of course, talking about this weekend's celebrity basketball game for anti-bullying. 23 before top of the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, we often joke that Black folks can't swim, but the USA Swimming Foundation's findings that 70% of Black kids actually can't swim is not funny at all. Olympic swimmer and gold medalist Cullen Jones has teamed up with the U.S. Swimming Foundation, serving as an ambassador to teach kids how to be champions in the pool and life. I recently chatted with him about this initiative.
I won't necessarily put it all on availability. I think the biggest problem is that we don't have a perception as a culture that swimming is important. We need to make sure that we get our kids' water safer. You know, we're not built to be around the water, but swim lessons will change these drowning statistics. Just getting kids acclimated to the water and making it a priority is the biggest issue. There's so many kids that I travel around all over the U.S. where they don't see swimming as a necessity. Parents don't see swimming as a necessity. You learn to walk, you learn to talk, you learn to eat, you learn to swim. These are things that are priorities that we really need to get our children safe around the water.
So when did this start for you?
I was almost one of the statistics. I was 5 years old. I was a only child, and I went to an amusement park with my parents. And I wanted to jump in the biggest pool, and I wanted to get on the biggest ride with my dad. And he decided he wanted to get on one of the biggest rides there. And as soon as he decided to be a part of it, I wanted to be a part of it. So he went down the biggest ride. I went down with him, and I unfortunately flipped upside down. Being 5 years old and thin, I flipped upside down. There were no lifeguards paying attention. My parents weren't paying attention. They were giving the inner tube to the next person. So when they finally turned around and looked at me, that's when they noticed that I was underwater. I was underwater for about 30 seconds. It only takes a child 30 seconds to drown. I was almost part of the statistic.
And after that, Japaners mandate get swimming lessons? Or did you say, look, I'm going to learn how to swim?
Well, my mom was the one that said, because she didn't know how to swim, that it was a bad idea to get on the ride in the first place. So my dad talking her into it, I would have hated to be him that night. But we got into swim lessons within the week.
And so as you're going around the country, what are parents saying to you? And also, what are you hearing from the kids? And are you also making about fun? Because a lot of times I hear some other folks who say, look, don't play around with water. It's very dangerous. But the reality is when kids get in water, they play.
But you're absolutely right. And you have so many parents that have already had a negative experience. So they treat water like fire. It's like hot, stay away. They try to teach their children, and they impart their fears on their children, which is what we're trying to break. USA Swimming Foundation has been instrumental. In 2008, I started working with them. And the big cause and reason behind why I jumped on board was to try to help, especially when it came to minorities, to be safer around the water. You said it perfectly. Parents treat water like, oh, nope, stay away. I've lived so many years without being a part of water. But they need to understand that their children are gonna be exposed to water. They're gonna go to a pool party. They're gonna hang out with friends, and they're gonna be exposed to water. Whenever I travel to any city, the first thing I always ask is, how many of you guys like to be near water? Every hand pops up. Every child likes to be near water. And so many parents need to understand that this is not only a necessity, but it's a priority. Get your children safer around water. And it's easy. All these drowning statistics that we've had, just get your children to swim lessons.
So how long does it take? So let's say if someone does swimming lessons, how long does it take for them to learn how to swim? What, three weeks, a month, 2 months?
You know, it's kind of hard. I always say that 10 lessons and they're on their way. You have some children. It's all about the learning curve. It's just like anything else, anything in school, same thing. It's all about just getting into it, learning how to swim. You have some swimmers that learn in 10 lessons. You have some swimmers that need 20 lessons. What? It doesn't matter.
What about adults?
They're learning.
What about adults? I mean, that was I had a guest on my show. He's in his 60s, and he was taking swimming lessons.
And I applaud him, because my mom is in her 60s, and she's learning how to swim right now. So there's no age. I think that once you learn, you never forget. It's like being on a bike. You never forget. So there's no age limit. There's no, and that's the beauty of the sport, and not only the beauty of the sport, but it's the beauty of the culture. Once you learn, you never forget.
All right. How can folks get more information?
The easiest way is to go to usaswimmingfoundation.org. You can sign up your child or another child to learn how to swim. So there's no reason why your child or another child shouldn't learn how to swim.
All right. Colin, certainly appreciate it, man. Thank you so very much.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Have a good one. All right, folks. As an original Harlem Globetrotter, Mel Lark Lemon was known as the Clown Prince of Basketball. He also is a Basketball Hall of Famer. Also the author of the book, Trust Your Next Shot, A Guide to a Life of Joy. He is here to talk about his work with kids in literacy and anti-bullying. Mel Lark, how you doing?
I'm well. How you doing
I'm
today?
Doing good. Always got a basketball in your hand?
Yes, sir.
First of all, one of the things that's great, I mean, the Globetrotters always brought smiles to many folks' faces, but kids were always attracted to those games.
Yes, and what happened 3 years ago, I got sick. And I met my doctor 10 years ago, and he said, you know, we got to keep you healthy because you bring joy to people.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you go to big cities, you go to small towns. He said, I know because I met you when I grew up in a small town in Egypt.
Wow.
And in the hospital, I heard them praying for me, and he told me later, he said, God sent me here to take care of you.
Well, that certainly has to be has to make you feel good about that.
Oh yes, it sure did.
And so, when did you want to do this initiative to stop bullying? When did that come about?
Well, you know, years ago we didn't know anything about bullying, you know, and I realized that one of the things that Dr. King talked about, you know, he was talking about good health. He was talking about love, that we should love each other. And that's when I picked up on it, and I said, hey, man, it's time that we start loving each other and not fighting against each other. And so we just started putting it together.
So how many cities have you been to?
Recently?
In terms of with the bullying celebrity basketball game.
Oh, gosh, all my life, basically. Because we talk about character also. Mm-hmm. If you have good character, you're not going to bully anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's what we started. That's when I started writing the book about Trust Your Next Shot. The acronym for SHOT is S for Spirit, H for Health, O for Opportunity, T for Teamwork. And when we started putting that out, people started talking about it. They started, hey, we want to be a part of this. And one of the things I did several years ago in New Mexico with a bunch of gang members, we decided to put on a basketball camp. And for every 10 kids, we had two counselors. And all my counselors were policemen. And after 5 days of that, those young men, the gang members, were loving on the policemen. They were thanking them. Said, we didn't know it was like this.
Well, I need to have you in the school then.
Yes, I'm trying to get them to let me start this in Baltimore. Let me come in Baltimore. Let's try it out. Let's see if it'll work. I know it'll work.
You know, you're such an inspiration, Mr. Lemon. You have such a skill set in not just athleticism, but also in the ability to know that you can bring common ground in different areas and get people together. And you continue to do that, talking about what your work is in the schools and gangs. How do you keep up the momentum to be able to keep bridging those gaps?
Well, I missed two games in my life. One was in Germany, Cologne, Germany, and I got sick at one of the games, and I said, well, I'll get something to eat, put on my stomach, because I hadn't eaten anything, and I fell in a bowl of goulash. I literally fell in the goulash, and I was out for two games, and I've played in 16,000 consecutive games, which means that, let's say, if Kobe Bryant, let's say, had played 100 games a year, which he has not. But let's say he played 100 games a year. It'd take him 100 years, 106 years to play as many games, you know. And in the places like Turkey and Greece, when I got sick on the stomach, they would call time out and let me go to the restroom and wait until I got back, man. So I never missed a game.
All right, then. Well, first of all, folks, the Stop the Bullying Celebrity Basketball Game with Radio 1 is going to kick off noon on Saturday at Northwestern High School in Hyattsville, Maryland. And also, Medlock Lemon's book is Trust Your Next Shot, A Guide to a Life of Joy. And so be sure to get that as well. It is certainly glad to have you here. Thank you so very much for bringing joy to folks over the years.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, I didn't realize that your show was taped early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. We used to be at 9 a.m. Now we at 7 a.m. So it's a little bit earlier. So we all try to get used to it.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful thing, you know, because the technology today, it can go any place.
That's right. All around the world.
Yes, sir. And the book is for you.
Okay.
And this is for you.
I appreciate it. All right, then. Well, this will certainly go on the shelf. Medlock Lemon, Hall of Famer since 2003. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks. Coming up, R&B Diva Shante Moore opens up about tonight's all-new episode of InSung. Also, we got Wilded Out Wednesday. Our comedians are here. And we're going to see how many of them actually have some basketball skills. Wait till I show y'all with Medlock in the black room. Anyway. Back on News 1 Now TV.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, y'all. Birthday shout-out time. Singer Frank Ocean turns 28. Singer-songwriter Ben Harper turns 46. Comedian Cheryl Underwood, she turns 52. And actress and singer Thelma Hopkins, she turns 67. On this day in history, 1992, actor Bill Cosby makes a bid to buy NBC to protect the images of black folks on television. But, of course, we know that certainly did not happen. All right, folks, it's Wildin' Out Wednesday. We've got our comedians in the house. This is really interesting here. So before Mel Lott Lemon came out, our comedians were in the black room. Check this out, y'all. Look at them trying to sit here and show their skills, see what they're doing. So, really? Really? Really?
I got skills.
Really? Alex say he got skills. I don't think he got skills. But again, you ain't played 15 years? Yeah, we can tell. We can tell. Yeah, okay. Right. Okay. Yeah, we see those skills.
We see the pass.
We ain't see the pass. We just saw y'all sitting here with the skills. All right, folks, comedians, Wild Night Wednesday. We got Nicky Moore, Alex Scott, Willie Lynch Jr. Alex, really? That's the best. That's the best you can do.
It's my rerun hat.
That's the best you can do.
It's my rerun hat.
That's your rerun hat.
Yeah. I knew y'all were gonna be doing the basketball. Remember when they used to come on? They used to have the basketball, and Dwayne couldn't get on the back of the truck.
Really?
That didn't work.
Really? No. It ain't work. Nicky, where does Bud get his hat from?
He found that in the lobby rolling and in Master's jacket, so we just decided.
Everybody loves my hat. Somebody offered to buy it on the way in.
Really? Okay.
He was homeless.
He made that hat from the stitches of
Michael,
four homeless men.
What does boy got on?
I was just showing up with Nicky.
I thought that was Jay-Z dad.
I didn't know.
You just showing up with Nicky.
I thought that was Jay-Z dad.
I was just hanging out in the green room.
You the driver? What I'm trying to figure out.
That's Jay-Z dad.
I'm talking.
Jay-Z.
Well, I see Nicky brought your grandma back.
Yes,
that's Jay-Z
grandma.
Daddy. Yeah. He looked like Jay-Z daddy.
Huh?
He looked like Jay-Z daddy.
Boy, you stupid.
Nobody who loved Roland Martin more than my grandmama's ashes.
Yes, right. We appreciate you all bringing your grandmama ashes on the show.
I know, and she appreciate coming too.
This her first time on TV?
Nope.
No.
Roland has made her a star.
This is about her 30th time on television.
She getting commercial offers and everything. Thank you, Roland Martin.
Well, I apologize for the attire.
What you mean?
Well, I didn't know.
You ain't
know? I was coming on. Yes.
You know you were coming on?
No.
So how you get on the show?
I was just hanging out.
Won't they do it?
He actually lost his shirt to child support. He just found out that's Jay-Z's real daddy. That's what happened.
So he's...
Come here.
You said lost the child support. Michael, you going to take that?
I'm going to have to, because it's true.
Okay, that's... So how many kids you got?
I got one.
You got one?
Yeah.
You couldn't keep up with that one payment.
Right, you paid up?
I'm paid up now.
How old is
you? Paid up now.
Yeah, she's 30, she 32.
And you just got caught up.
Yeah. I got to go to a break. We'll come back in a moment. News One Now on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, welcome back. News One Now, TV One, Wildin' Out Wednesday. Any of y'all used to go to the Globetrotters games?
I went to one.
Went to one?
I went to one. No, I went to several, come to think of it, over the years.
Gotcha. That little senior moment right there?
Yeah, senior moment.
Okay,
senior
I got you. Nikki, Did you go to the game?
I never went to a
Did your grandma go to any?
No, but I'd like to have gone. And have.
I mean, you do know they're still around.
I used to fantasize about having a Globetrotter.
But I watched the cartoon.
Yeah.
And I love Curly Neal. I love Matalog. I loved all of them. I just lived in Culpeper, Virginia. We couldn't get to D.C. to the game. That was before 66 and 95 was built.
That's when they thought they needed a passport to get on 95.
Well, first of all, although they use basketball, I mean, those guys brought last a whole bunch of folks.
Oh, man.
They did.
And they performed in front of millions.
So, it's like, and one. Games are trying to take over for them, but they don't have the funny.
No. And they don't have
the funny.
I mean, they got the moves and everything, but they don't
have the funny and the personality.
No.
The character.
Yeah, the Globetrotters, they had tons of characters.
And now that's why I wear my head like this, because of Curly Neal now.
You need to put that down. That's what you need to do. You need to go and put that hat back on.
I thought you didn't like my hat.
Actually, you look like Cochise in Cooley High. That's what you look like.
I ain't going under no bridges today.
That's right. Hold on. We're going to We're going to pour some out for the brothers who ain't here.
Cornbread Earl and him.
My God. Alex, do me a favor.
Turn your grandma around so she can see.
Alex, do me a favor. Don't wear the hat again.
Don't wear this
Don't
hat.
Wear the hat again. Don't wear the hat
It's like
again.
My golf slash ghetto slash 70s potty.
Between the hat, the jacket, the shirt, the tie, the pocket square, and these shoes, say dog. I mean, you just, right here.
You don't like my shoes? Right
here. That's an outfit.
Show them
that
stop.
Outfit look like you're going to kill a family.
I'm right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's what he look like. He on his way to kill a family.
I got my Ronald McDonald socks. Hey.
Look like peppermint on his
look. McDonald's sent these to me.
Look,
don't hate me. But see, I'm coordinated. You got 18 colors on.
But you got straight on in colors on.
Them the socks that you got when you get ready to get into somebody's ascot. You know, like Bill O'Wrongly.
Okay, all right, y'all. Nikki, that's she having a senior one. Moment too.
Her and the grandma. So she can see.
Why are you trying to see my?
They got no sense. Real quick, Alice, where you performing?
Next November 18th, I got my own show starting in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Alex Scott and Friends.
Nikki.
November 15th, Lincoln Theater. It's going to be hilarious. D.L. Hughley, Timmy Hall.
Okay.
From the Donnie Simpson Morning.
Mike, are you performing anywhere or are you just here with Nikki?
Well, I'm actually producing the first documentary on the Comedy Act Theater, which is what gave birth to this modern generation of black comedians.
All right, then. Well, good job there, folks. Tonight on TV One, Hollywood diva Shantae Moore is the subject of our Unsung. Here's a sneak peek.
On an all-new Unsung, Shantae Moore. Love songs were her specialty.
It was about singing stuff I believed in.
She's in love with love.
But three failed marriages.
He wasn't there anymore for her.
Court cases have made it hard for me to heal.
Almost destroyed her.
She got depressed. She went to a very dark place. I had to get myself together and decide if I was going to live or die.
Don't miss Unsung. Two all-new episodes back-to-back. Wednesday, October 28th, starting at 8 on TV One.
All right then, Alex said he's hoping he's gonna be a Unsung one day.
Oh yeah, that's a beautiful thing when you make it high enough that you can fall and everybody wanna know what happened.
Yeah, you just stayed down. You fell. Y'all, I gotta go. Tomorrow we'll talk about the Republican debate tonight. All right.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.